It's the Malloy Program. A little hot here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. It's supposed to be 98 tomorrow and then 100 on Wednesday. So if we're not on tomorrow or Wednesday, it's because we're all dead. Starting tonight and for the next couple of weeks, I want to let you know that a huge chunk of the program is being sponsored by Farm Aid and Willie Nelson's BioWilly, biodiesel company that mitigates the impact of greenhouse gases on the environment. Farm Aid is coming up Saturday, August 13th. And this is the, oh my God, it goes back to what, 85? 25 years? And Willie and Annie Nelson, who apparently are listeners number 37 and 38, because, you know, we have a very small audience, enjoy the program and got in touch with us a couple of weeks ago and talked about being sponsors for the next 2 weeks. So you'll hear me talking about Farm Aid and biodiesel over the next couple of weeks during the program. And just for future reference here this evening and further into the 2 weeks, go to their website, farmaid.org, and you can watch Farm Aid live at that website on Saturday, August 13th, farmaid.org. And you can make a donation there if you want to also. So check it out. Just remember, since 1985, Willie Nelson and Farm Aid have worked to keep family farmers on the land. You remember when this started? You remember what was going on? Farmers were committing suicide because they were losing their farms. This is back in the bad old days of the Reagan administration. Thank God nothing like this happens today. Oh, well. Anyway, Willie Nelson and Farm Aid started back then to keep family farmers on the land because family farmers, as you may or may not know, are the best resources we have in this country for good food, health, and a strong economy. Family farm. I'm not talking about factory farms. Forget that. Forget that. Feedlots, diseases. Forget that. I'm talking about family farms. You know what I'm talking about. Don't be stupid. The annual Farm Aid concert has raised more than $39 million. To help family farmers thrive. So anyway, check them out, farmaid.org. And are we gonna have an interview with anybody from Farm Aid? Like maybe Willie? Well, that'd be cool. And tonight's first hour is sponsored by Ryan Wilson, who writes, "Hey, right-wingers, Mike does indeed have listeners. And we have a very, very long memory. Keep fighting, Mike. We've got your back." Thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it. Well, the vote was taken today, right? The vote was, what was the vote? I mean, not that it matters. It really doesn't matter. But just for the sheer hell of it, what was the vote? 269 to 161. The House passed the landmark, the New York Times calls it, the landmark compromise to raise the debt ceiling and sharply cut spending, drawing a solid majority of the Republicans, along with about half of the Democrats, to push through a package that was ultimately described by many as an unpalatable necessity. No tax increases, of course. They're just going to cut your throat. Don't you think it's kind of time to just write off Barack Obama and forget about it? I mean, really. Now, what do we do if we write off Barack Obama and forget about him? I'm not sure. I really don't know. But we're going to be talking about that tonight. Paul Krugman made it very clear this morning, New York Times. Boy, you talk about a eye-catching headline to his column, "The President Surrenders." "The deal itself," Krugman writes, "is a disaster, and not just for Obama and his Democrats. It'll damage an already depressed economy. It will make America's long-run deficit problems worse, not better, and most important, by demonstrating that raw extortion works and carries no political cost, it will take America a long way down the road to banana republic status." He's not kidding. Krugman is not kidding. Now, when you hear about this deal, about the things that are going to be slashed and burned right down to the ground, why she keeps and keeps this in mind, even though the extreme right, the Nazis in this country now, that apparently have tremendous sway over the direction of the company or the country, the Nazis are this is not their last attempt to destroy the country. There's more coming, lots more. But what they have learned is that Barack Obama is a chump, a total chump, as easy to push around and kick his ass as any president ever. And they've also learned that the Democratic Party leadership is worse. Now, I'd like to hear, I'm sure they're out there, but I don't listen. I'd like to hear the few so-called liberal or progressive voices on radio and television spitting their guts out trying to defend what has happened. I'm sure it's going on. I'm sure it's going on. The delusion in this country is so deep and so wide and so everlasting as to render the whole political system now effectively dead, which it is. You can continue to play game. Oh, I'm going to go vote. Go ahead. Go right ahead. And if you really do think that it's going to make a bit of difference, go ahead. Think it. This is astonishing. This has been 30 years in the making, and it's here. Here it is. All the effort by the crazed right wing, by people like the Koch brothers, like Citizens United, like Grover Norquist, like all of them. It's finally, this is their victory. Only it's not complete. This is just step one of victory, not compromise. Don't listen to what you hear. There was no compromise. Are you kidding me? There's no deal worked out. Barack Obama surrendered. He didn't even put up a fight. The Democrats in Congress are absolutely useless. They didn't put up a fight. I'll tell you, they're going to be serving drinks of ice water in hell the next time I contribute to the Democratic Party or pay any attention to what the Democratic Party says. They are losers of the worst kind because as they lose, they trash the country. I'd rather deal with these upfront Nazi Republicans than the slimy, sneaky, cowardly Democrats.
for Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour. Back to Krugman's take on the president's surrenders. That was the title above his column today in the Times. He says, start with the economics. We currently have a deeply depressed economy. We almost certainly will continue to have a depressed economy all through next year. And we will probably have a depressed economy through 2013 as well, if not beyond. The worst thing you can do in these circumstances is slash government spending, since that will depress the economy even further. Pay no attention to those who invoke the confidence fairy, claiming that tough action on the budget will reassure businesses and consumers, leading them to spend more. It doesn't work that way. A fact confirmed by many studies of the historical record. Indeed, slashing spending while the economy is depressed won't even help the budget situation much and might well make it worse. On one side, interest rates on federal borrowing are currently very low, so spending cuts now will do little to reduce future interest costs. On the other side, making the economy weaker now also will hurt its long-run prospects, which will in turn reduce future revenue. So those demanding spending cuts now are like the medieval doctors who treated the sick by bleeding them and thereby making them even sicker. And then there are the reported terms of the deal, which amount to an abject surrender on the part of the president. First, there will be big spending cuts with no increase in revenue, which is, read my lips, no new taxes, no taxes, no taxes. I bet you Grover Norquist is just orgasmic tonight. The rat bastard finally pulled it off. Americans, say goodbye to your country. Just say goodbye to it. Seriously. Say goodbye to what you've known up to this point. Now, some of you won't live long enough, or some of us won't live long enough to see the ultimate damage. But this is it. This is it. Krugman goes on. There will be big spending cuts with no increase in revenue. Then a panel. Have you heard about this? This super panel, the 12, I don't know where in the hell they're going to come from. Six Democrats, six Republicans. Well, you know where that's going to lead. Right into the nearest latrine. It's going nowhere. But anyway, let's continue to pretend. A panel will make recommendations for further deficit reduction. And if these recommendations aren't accepted, here it comes, there will be more spending cuts. Now, think for a moment, if you would, please. Can you still do that? I sometimes wonder whether or not I can. The only way to increase the only way to balance a budget is to get more money in, cut some of the spending. I weeks ago I said, Mr. President, if you want to cut spending, very simple, slash 80% out of this filthy, putrid, bloated death budget for war and bombs and bullcrap we don't need. Just do that. Just slash 80% for the next 5 years. By slashing 80%, we will still be spending more than any other country on earth for weaponry. But I digress. Without revenue, nothing is going to happen. Without a tax, and can you believe the rich sons of bitches in this country did it? First, they pervert the electoral system with their proprietary computer codes that counts and registers the votes. Now that was slick. Secondly, they make sure there's a Supreme Court that will give the election to whomever the fat cats wanted to go to. And lastly, with Citizens United and all the money that now flows into the system, it's over. It's over. Now, if you want to stay here and live your life, go ahead. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I may do that. I may definitely do that. I may stay here and ride this son of a bitch until it's so tired and desperate it just collapses. I don't know. And I may stay here and try my little teensy-weensy effort to try to turn things around. Or I may say to hell with this and leave. I don't know what you're going to do. If the recommendations of the Super 12 aren't met, there will be more spending cuts. And more. And more. Republicans are emboldened by the way Obama keeps folding in the face of their threats. He surrendered last December, extending all the Bush tax cuts. He surrendered in the spring when they threatened to shut down the government. And he has now surrendered on a grand scale to raw extortion over the debt ceiling. Maybe it's just me, but I see a pattern here. Oh, yeah. And they will see.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Riders on the storm. 25 before the hour. Krugman. Column today, the president surrenders, and in it he pretty much makes it very clear from an economic standpoint, and in my opinion from other standpoints, this president has become totally useless, completely useless. By that I mean to us, to the working class, to the American worker, to the working poor, to the middle class, what's left of it, completely, totally useless. Now, I know a lot of people are going to try to spin this, this crap that has happened in Washington over the past 3 or 4 months, as Obama playing chess, everybody else playing chess. I'm so sick of that phrase. I got an email today from who? Kathy in Maine, I think. That I'll share with you a little bit later. The Express is pretty much the same thing. This is just a complete joke. What has happened in this, with this president, with this Congress, it's a joke, except it's not funny. Krugman writes, did the president have any alternative this time around? He's referencing the fact that Obama surrendered last December, extending all the Bush tax cuts, when any halfwit knew that the whole thing was set up that way 10 years ago. So that when they were ready to expire, these filthy-mouthed Republicans could start screaming, tax increases, tax increases. So the uber-wealthy in this country continue to get their free ride. You sons of bitches, there's a day of reckoning coming. I'm telling you, it is coming. And you know who you are. There's a day coming. It may not be for a while, but in any society, unless you murder us all in the middle class, in the working class, very quickly, because that's where revolution arises. But I'm telling you, you better do it quickly, because we do have a tipping point. Our leadership doesn't. Our president doesn't. Our Democratic Party doesn't. But we do. That's a warning. So he extended all the Bush tax cuts. He surrendered this spring when Republicans threatened to shut down the government. Now he surrendered on a grand scale to raw extortion over the debt ceiling. Over the goddamn debt ceiling, this president has given away everything. And he's gotten nothing. Nothing in return. Did he have any alternative this time around? Krugman asked. Yes, he answers. First of all, he could have and should have demanded an increase in the debt ceiling back in December. When asked why he didn't, he replied that he was sure the Republicans would act responsibly. Obama said that. Well, I'm sure the Republicans will act responsibly. What do you use for brains, Mr. President? Cardboard? Are you out of your mind? Republicans, teabaggers, will act responsibly? Are you kidding me? Do you believe that, Mr. Obama? Do you really, after 8 years of the Bush crime family, after 3 years of you, President, watching the kind of cooperation or responsibility you're getting from the Republicans, you believe that still? What are you, insane? And even now, the Obama administration, Krugman writes, could have resorted to legal maneuverings to sidestep the debt ceiling using any of several options. In ordinary circumstances, this might have been an extreme step. But faced with the reality of what is happening, namely raw extortion, on the part of a party that controls one House of Congress, it would have been totally justifiable for Obama to use tactics other than, well, here, let me get down and kiss your ass. Here, let me kiss yours now. Okay, here, let me kiss your ass. As Krugman says, at the very least, Obama could have used the possibility of a legal end-run to strengthen his bargaining position. Instead, he ruled all such options out from the beginning. He could have invoked the 14th Amendment. Oh, no. No, I'm going to expect the Republicans to act responsibly. Krugman concludes by saying, but wouldn't taking a tough stance on Obama's part have worried the markets? Ooh, yeah, let's not forget those goddamn bloodsuckers. Probably not, Krugman says. In fact, if I were an investor, I would be reassured, not dismayed, by a demonstration that the president is willing and able to stand up to blackmail on the part of the right-wing extremists. Instead, he has chosen to demonstrate the opposite. He folds. He is, what I've been saying for 2 years, a total coward. He has no leadership ability whatsoever. I would rather have George W. Bush as president than this man. At this point, because then at least I know what the enemy is about. Krugman says, make no mistake about it. What we're witnessing here is a catastrophe on multiple levels. Do you get that, you Obama supporters? Do you get that? He says it is, of course, a political catastrophe for Democrats, who just a few weeks ago seemed to have Republicans on the run over their plan to dismantle Medicare. Now Mr. Obama has thrown all that away. And the damage isn't over. There will be more choke points where Republicans can threaten to create a crisis unless the president surrenders. And they can now act with the confident expectation that he will surrender. In the long run, Krugman writes, Democrats won't be the only losers. What Republicans have just gotten away with calls our whole system of government into question. After all, how can American democracy work if whichever party is most prepared to be ruthless to threaten the nation's economic security gets to dictate policy? And the answer is, maybe it can't work. Krugman writes maybe now, A year from now, he'll be writing the same thing that we've been talking about on this program for 2 years. It is over. It is over. So, by the way, I forgot to mention, this hour is sponsored by Ryan Wilson, whose message is, "Hey, right-wingers, Mike does indeed have listeners, and we have a very, very long memory. Keep fighting, Mike. We've got your back." Oy. You know, I've been following this closely and watching the vote in the House today. And yes, it was very heartwarming to see Gabriel Gifford show up. It is almost surreal. I mean, here, these members of Congress, of the House, are destroying the little bit of this republic that is still viable. They're destroying it, tearing it to pieces. And the human interest aspect of Representative Gabriel Giffords shows up. And all of a sudden, everybody forgets that it's murderer's row. Everybody forgets that they're busy hacking each other to death and destroying the country. Literally destroy. You think Krugman is wrong? Do you think the Nobel Prize winner in economics is wrong? Do you? This guy, Krugman? You think he's right? You think Stiglitz is wrong? Who do you think is right? But in the midst of this ending of the American Republic, in walks Gabriel Giffords. And the House members melt. You know, good for Gabriel Giffords in making a comeback. She showed up to vote. Yes. Good for her that she survived a Republican, Christian, right-wing, Beck, Limbaugh, Grover Norquist worshiper who tried to kill her. We'll be back. Stay with us. This hour has been sponsored by Ryan Wilson. Thank you, Ryan. His message, "Hey, right-wingers, Mike does indeed have listeners, and we have a very, very long memory. Keep fighting, Mike. We've got your back." Thank you, Ryan. And also, Farm Aid, excuse me, I want to remind you again, since 1985, Willie Nelson and Farm Aid have worked to keep family farmers on the land because, obviously, family farmers are the best resource we have in this country for good food, health, and a strong economy. The annual Farm Aid Concert has raised awareness and more than $39 million to help family farmers thrive. And you can be part of the mission and the music. Just watch the live Farm Aid 2011 concert Saturday, August 13th at farmaid.org. And give a donation today for a future of good food from family farms. Willie Nelson, who when very few people left in the country, not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. Now, from Prairie 2, regarding what happened, he writes, the kitty is always hungry, so very hungry. He writes, the only good thing to be said about the budget deal is that it could have been worse. We don't know yet when these austerity cuts start taking effect, and most of the damage to the economy won't happen until the bleeding actually starts. There is one upside to austerity. Despite all the storm and drang from the bond rating agencies, the interest rates on treasury bonds continue to fall. In fact, except for a brief panic a couple of weeks ago, the downward trend has been steady ever since the specter of default was raised last spring. And this does continue to drive down mortgage rates, which are based on the 10-year treasury note. Not that anybody can qualify for a home mortgage anymore, though. We could go through all of this again at Thanksgiving, depending on how rigid the rules are for the super slash and burn committee that is supposed to come up with the majority of the austerity measures. There's even the possibility that if Obama has been a good little boy, they might bring him some taxes levied on the rich for his Christmas stocking. He's more likely to find a pony in it, or rather pony byproducts. It seems more and more likely that Obama really does buy into the growth through austerity nonsense, and the so-called real economy is created by the Federal Reserve, and he should keep his hands off of it. He really believes that. Obama is a smart guy, but he's a lawyer, and so he has no real education. He's capable of following along with the reports put out by the even smarter guys that work for the Fed and the Wall Street banks, and they probably make sense to him. That comes from not knowing any history and not realizing that economists get paid by how well they can lie. The really well-paid ones are complete stone-cold sociopaths. I've seen Alan Greenspan's wife on the news a lot lately, and she's capable of telling some real doozies herself. You know who that is, of course. The pundits had promised us a big rally on Wall Street this morning since the deal was imminent. And since it had lost 500 points last week, that should have been easy. Indeed, on the opening bell, the market shot right up. Then the manufacturing index came out and the market fell through the floor. It did pull near to even late in the day, but on light trading, which doesn't really mean all that much. You'll hear people screaming hyperinflation, buy gold, panic, panic. But we are in a depression. The real risk in a depression is deflation, no matter how much money they print. Since wages are declining, government spending is declining, job numbers are declining, demand for goods is declining, and there are more and more things declining. Well, just about everything is declining. This all presses down hard for deflation and not inflation. Not that buying stuff you really need will be a bargain. Deflation only works for you if you are rich. And even then, it's a dangerous tiger to keep as a pet. Kitty is always hungry. So very hungry. Prairie2.com. Man, I have something from Michael and Roswell. I'll read her when I come back. Jeanette writes in, I think people are giving Obama way too much credit by saying he folds, compromises, plays chess. He works for the rich. for the corporations and the military-industrial complex, and is it doing exactly what he intended and what he wants to do? It's either going to get him reelected or a nice, cushy corporate job. And dumbass Republican libertarian, also known as Tea Party voters, will believe the right-wing politicians when they blame the crappy economy on Obama, the socialist. So they'll vote for the right-wingers again, not understanding that the choice between Republican slash libertarian and Democrat is a right-wing versus right-wing enterprise. Blanking homophobic anti-Christian blanks. Woo! Woo-hoo! Oh, man. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back after the break, and a little bit more chatter crap from me, and then we're going to open up the lines and get your take on what happened this afternoon. Stay with us if you feel like it. I'm Mike Malloy. Since 1985, Willie Nelson and Farm Aid have worked to keep family farmers on the land. And you know why? Because family farmers are this country's best resource for good food, good health, and a strong economy. And the annual Farm Aid concert over all those years has raised awareness and more than $39 million to help family farmers make it and to thrive. And you can be part of that mission and the music. This August 13th, it's a Saturday, you can watch live Farm Aid 2011, the concert. Go to farmaid.org for that and give a donation today for a future of good food from family farms. You know, and I want to just clear up something again. I am not sticking a knife in the Democratic Party as I knew it, as I voted for it, as I grew up with it. That Democratic Party still exists in a parallel dimension, apparently. It doesn't exist here. So when I talk about I will never vote Democrat or support the Democratic Party again, I mean what passes for the Democratic Party now is an abomination. It's horrible. Starting with the Democratic Leadership Conference and probably before that, it's just horrible. But as far as me personally, my own personal political beliefs, they are Democrat, socialist, always have been since I've been a thinking adult, always will be. Democratic slash socialist or social democrat or however you want to put it. Democratic socialism to me is the absolute answer to an economic world gone totally insane, just completely mad to the point where the whole planet is being devoured by this predatory capitalism. So as far as my own, if you're interested, I know because I have a lot of Democrats who listen to this program. I am not anti-Democrat or anti-Democratic Party as I knew it, as it was at one time, as you knew it. I'm talking about what passes for a Democratic Party now, and it's disgusting. It's sickening. It's filthy. It's maddening. And as far as Barack Obama as president, how much more rope you want to give him as he slowly strangles the hell out of your country? How much more you want to give him? All the Obama apologists, well, you tell me, somebody send me, how far are you willing to go? Oh, well, you know, he's doing the best he can. He's doing a good job. You know, he's trying. Are you kidding me? So I'm just curious. How far are you going to go before you realize? How far are you going to go in your Obama apologia before you realize what's happening and how piss poor of a leader he really is? He's a great orator. He's a great one when it comes to rhetoric. He can talk a possum out of a pine tree, can he? But when it comes to leadership, when it comes to standing up to these predatory bastards that are Republicans, what has this man done? Go ahead, send me a list. Tell me what he's done. Tell me where he stood up to the Republican Party, where he has fought tooth and nail for the working class. Tell me about those picket lines he said he was going to march on if he could find comfortable shoes. Oh, my God. Remember that? And then when the Wisconsin Civil War occurred, he couldn't even mention it. Well, just that by way of explanation. Now, before I take some, we're open. The phones are open here, 877-996-2556. So call in as you want. Before I get into that, I want to tell you also, there's a biodiesel company that mitigates the impact of greenhouse gases on the environment. It's started by Willie Nelson, and it's called BioWilly. How's that? Biodiesel is a renewable fuel which reduces the need to import foreign oil and is locally produced, so it promotes community development. And Willie Nelson is happy to announce a new partnership for his company, BioWilly. Biodiesel, Pioneer Pacific Biodiesel, has signed a licensing agreement for the brand name and will be marketing BioWilly biodiesel with the highest industry standards. So ask your fuel supplier when BioWilly will be available in your area. It's made in America. It's stayed in America. It's called BioWilly Biodiesel. So check it out. And don't forget, farmaid.org. Just go there and hang out. Take a look at the list of performers. Yikes. Now, as promised here, Michael in Roswell. He says, I think this latest vote on the debt ceiling needs to be thought of as an economic enabling act. Oh, God. Just as the USA Patriot Act and the FISA Modification Acts were originally advertised as temporary because of the bill's sunset provisions, but which have never been allowed to expire because they radically empower the national security state, this act will continue to exist in perpetuity. Just as those previous security acts enabled the so-called Gang of Eight to make the most important security decisions for the entire Congress, and the Gang of Eight constituted less than 2% of Congress, this new act creates the super committee. What is it, 12 people? Just 2.2% of Congress to make economic decisions for the whole of Congress. Now, apart from all the very, very bad aspects of this act, this one feature will continue to haunt us for decades to come, and that's presuming the country survives to see decades to come. It's a foregone conclusion that the most conservative and big business-oriented members of both houses will be chosen for this committee. Well, hell, any bets that it will have only the most progressives instead? Huh? Anybody want to? Okay, I didn't think so. And the short-circuiting of rules means that progressives, few that there are in Congress, will be powerless to influence the shape of economic legislation. Let me digress from what Michael wrote. Do you understand what's going on? Big decisions now are going to be made by 12 members of Congress where it concerns the debt, the debt ceiling, spending, cuts, no revenue increases. As Michael points out, who do you think is going to wind up on that Super 12 committee? Who do you think is going to be there? Progressives? Liberal? How about Dennis going to say, yeah. Bernie Sanders? You think he'll go? Nah, yeah? What do you think? What do you think? So power, do you understand what's happening? Power is being consolidated in fewer and fewer hands. Do you get this? For Christ's sake, tell me you get that. Now, instead of 535 members of the House and Senate making these decisions, it'll be 12. Oh, I know. They're recommendations. But what happens if the recommendations are not followed? Then the axe comes down. Back to Michael. This act also means that big business will be saved much money on lobbying since they can now concentrate their time and money on just 12 people. Knowing that the Repugs and the Blue Dog Democrats will go along with anything presented to them as pro-business. We're going to see rollbacks not only of the social safety net. Oh, we got a break? Oh, all right. Let me come back right there. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
With Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Michael and Roswell concludes. We're going to see rollbacks not only on the social safety net, but of environmental protections and food safety, workplace safety, endangered species protection, wage and hour laws, and other beneficial legislation, all in the name of deficit reduction. And a flat tax and or a value-added tax and other regressive taxation will not be far behind, all of which will maintain or increase the deficit, thus ensuring the continuation of the so-called super committee. We will see everything except the four things necessary to actually reduce the deficit. An end to foreign wars. Substantial reductions in military spending. A return to a truly progressive system of taxation. And finally, job creation to increase revenues and reduce the need for job loss subsidies. This legislation, the one that was passed today, is designed to make the economic picture worse for workers and better for business. It ensures that unemployment remains high, thus guaranteeing that businesses can work existing employees harder for longer hours and less money and be much more selective about qualifications and pay less for any new employees they might need to hire. It does nothing to rein in speculation in the markets, thus ensuring that more and more of the nation's spare cash will be siphoned off to those in the financial system adept at not paying taxes, further contributing to the annual deficits. Because the government is an integral part of the economy, an unstable economy induces instability in government, a point that's been amply proved over the last several years. This legislation ensures an unstable economy for the foreseeable future, and that does not bode well for even the limited democracy that exists now in this country. Michael in Roswell. It just keeps happening. Mark writes, Mike, you know, whenever the Egyptian government does something the people don't like, there are riots in the streets. Why are we the only nation that sits on our asses and does nothing? Oh, God. And Robert Reich at his blog writes, ransom paid. Nancy is in Camarillo, California. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Mike. I missed a little bit of the beginning of your show, so excuse me if you've already covered this.
No problem.
I have noticed online today, I mean, I don't talk to teabaggers, really. I'm not interested in debating them. I don't watch programs where people debate them. I know who they are. And I think that we've always had like 20%, maybe 30% of the country. It's pretty far right, mostly because of racism, but also with the religious reinforcement and bad, you know, attitudes about women and so on. So I figured they're there. I'm not going to change them. I don't want to talk to them. But what's disappeared is the rest of us, the liberals who are supposed to be in the Democratic Party representing working people, the elderly, the very young, the non-whites, and everybody who's pretty much had to struggle every day to get a fair shake and mm-hmm. to be able to afford housing and food and so on. And today I saw online that it isn't the teabaggers that were talking so much. It's the Daily Kos and it's the liberals. They're all over the place saying, this is a tremendous victory for Obama. He is so clever. Can you understand what he's done here? Boy, he's really got those teabaggers exactly where he wants them now.
Really?
This type, mystical type of, in other words, and it is interesting because a lot of times in order, and I don't hate Obama on a personal level at all, but there is this kind of a mystical approach to it, like he's like, you know, Superman or something, and he's so clever, and most people just missed it completely. Well, this is the official Democratic Party propaganda wing, and Daily Kos is out there saying this, and they're out there saying, in a very Orwellian sense, they're not saying we have to, you know, live with it, that's the best they could get. Oh, no, they don't even go that far. They say, this was a tremendous victory because Obama is so smart. And the main thing I keep thinking is that I keep thinking of Weimar Germany back in the 1920s. They thought they could do the kissy face with the right wing and hammer the left.
Hey, Nancy, can you hold on a second?
Yes.
All right, I got to do a break here, bottom of the hour break. So if you don't, all right, just hold on, and we'll come back because I want to hear the rest of what you got to say. So is the audience. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
what you do if I...
To border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
When I'm tired and thinking cold, I hide in my music, forget the day, and dream of a girl I used to know.
25 before the hour, we're talking to Nancy in Camarillo, California. Okay, where were we?
Well, I was just going to say that I keep thinking of the Weimar Republic, and particularly the 1920s in Germany. They had the end of World War One. A large segment of the population was unemployed. The economy was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
A big bunch of people, you know, veterans were not getting any aid. They were sleeping out in the streets, and it was a big public disgrace. And the bankers had made so much money off of the war, and they were widely hated. They had the art. They showed it, the Dadaist. So there was this whole influence there of people who were sick of the war, sick of the banks, sick of the rich, and so on. And they had a liberal government, the Weimar Republic, that, you know, pretty much followed kind of a wishy-washy type of a governing policy, but was historically kind of supposed to be liberals. And they decided to go after the left and wipe them out. And they kind of thought they could make friends with the right. Well, of course, after they had really attacked and driven out the left, the right, the Nazis, took over by the early 30s. And what I'm seeing going on in the official Democratic Party is an assault on the left. Like, they have decided that the real enemies and the ones that have to be denounced. And
mm-hmm.
You hear Obama all the time saying, oh, those people on the left, and I'm not...
Whiners, crybabies, right.
Oh, pardon me, but, you know, that. And that's what I'm seeing online today, these aggressive attacks on me and other people who are saying this is like a rotten deal and they've sold us out, you know. So, anyway, I'm just thinking, if history is ever a predictor of the future, people need to stop and look around and think about it.
Yeah, I agree with you completely, Nancy. I cannot quite get my mind around why Democrats, whether they are those websites you mentioned or just plain old Democrats, are seeing that even what's his name, the Jay Carney, the press secretary today, I understand, referred to this agreement as a victory for the American people. It is not a victory for the, if it's anything but a victory. I mean, it's an absolute smashing defeat for the American public. What this president and this Democratic Party leadership, have agreed to do. And I don't know what the hell's going on. I mean, I'm lost. I'm completely lost. I don't speak the language anymore.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks, Nancy.
All right.
Take care. I appreciate you checking in. I so agree with that. What the hell is? I mean, this is just more of the same. You know, stay asleep. It's as if the people who have identified themselves online, on the radio, on television, who have identified themselves as liberal or progressive or even Democrat, it's as if they have. I don't know. I'm starting to sound paranoid here, but it's as if they have sold out completely and are still trying to maintain the facade to chumps like you and me. You know, if I am aware, I don't listen to talk radio online or anyplace else. I cannot do it, so I don't listen to it. And I stay away from websites now that claim to be centrist Democrat. There's no such thing as a centrist Democrat. There is no such thing as a radical center. There is no such thing as get along, go along, let's compromise, let's reach across the aisle. Who still believes that? Morons, idiots! Show me one scintilla of proof that that works. Just anything. Somebody. Whether you're left-wing media or a progressive talk show host or a writer for Daily Coast or wherever, show me where this has worked. Where compromise on the left has equaled compromise on the right. One, just one example. That wasn't all illusion. The teabaggers will tell you they compromise. That's why so many of them voted against this. But like I heard somebody on MSNBC say tonight, if the teabaggers love this so much, why'd they vote against it? It's because they're looking, they don't want a TKO, they want a knockout. They want to abso-goddamn-lutely destroy the country and will not be happy until they do. Because these are sick, sick sociopaths. I mean, how many times? In the Reagan years, did I read someplace the budget ceiling or debt ceiling was raised double digit times? Well, 14, I don't know, 12 times. In the Bush years, 7 times. Nobody, I mean, have you ever heard of anything about the debt ceiling being raised or not raised? Have you ever heard of anything like this at all? No, you have not. Somebody suggested, I don't know who it was, that Truman used the 14th Amendment. Truman? What is that, 6 decades ago? Joe is in Paris, Texas, listening online. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Mike. I was watching Congress today when they had a vote for this.
Uh-huh.
See, I'm thinking this president, he lost me back when he done that underhanded deal with pharma back there and the healthcare people. And then, you know, he wouldn't fight for the public office. It's just been one thing after another with Obama for me. And I'm like, This girl that talked, Nancy, that talked before, you know, they some places online, and I know the Daily Coast is one of them that keep, I cannot stand these Obama apologists. They just, I mean, evidently he's not a liberal. He's not even a Democrat. He's a Republican. I don't know why the Republicans want to get rid of him. He gives them everything they want.
Well, that's the crazy part. Some of these people still call him a socialist. What in the hell does he have to do to prove to these morons that he's not? I'll tell you what he has to do. He has to turn white.
That's true.
Once he turns into a Caucasian, Joe, then the Republicans and the teabaggers will acknowledge him as being one of their own. A conservative. Joe, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Paul is in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hello, Paula.
Hey, Mike. I'm with everybody on The Apologist.
Hey.
No different than the knuckle draggers who defended everything Bush did.
Mm.
They are no different, including people on talk radio. Stephanie Miller was practically twisting herself into pretzels today to defend this. And going on with the nonsense that he had to. He had no other choice. And it's, you know?
Yeah.
Every chance he got, he went out and he affirmed right-wing nonsense.
He did.
About the deficit being the problem. He's been dying to cut Social Security. When did he do that? The Katz Commission? How long was that? Was before the midterms.
Yeah, that's right. That commission, yeah.
It was downright irresponsible for Democrats not to do everything within their power to block Republican obstruction. They had to see it coming. I'm not that smart, and I saw it coming.
And it's a shame that the leader, the titular leader of the Democratic Party, that would be Barack Obama, and the man who controls the Oval Office, couldn't work with the group that controls the Senate and tell the teabaggers and the Republicans to go straight to hell. I mean, there was zero leadership here. Nothing. Zero. Zip on the part of Barack Obama and the Senate Democrats and the House Democrats. Nothing. They just...
Barack Obama isn't a leader.
No, he's
not. I don't know what he is, but he is not a leader.
No, he's a good speaker. He's a great. He's great with rhetoric.
Yeah, well, so are lots of people, but that doesn't. That you know.
I know.
Doesn't. And you know. And actually, you know what? I kind of wish he weren't, because at least we could laugh. We don't laugh anymore. Have you noticed that?
No, we don't.
Remember how much, I mean, the Bush years were awful, but remember how much we laughed.
That's right, because he was admittedly a clown, and everybody knew he was a clown, and he couldn't put six words together without stumbling over his eye teeth. And here we have Barack Obama, who takes rhetoric and twists it inside out and upside down and sounds great, and then he does nothing. Paul, I got to leave it there. Thanks, dear heart. I appreciate you checking in. Take care.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Farm Aid 2011. It's been going on, Farm Aid, since 1985, and Willie Nelson and the Farm Aid organization have worked their damnedest to keep family farmers on the land. For a number of reasons. For this year, I want you to go to farmaid.org, farmaid.org. Take a look around. Maybe give a donation for this cause. Saturday, August 13th, is the live Farm Aid 2011 concert. And farmaid.org is where you can hear that concert. So check them out. Okay, and thanks to Willie and Annie Nelson for the sponsorship. Bill is in Paso Robles, California. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, as I just told Kathy, I just watched Keith Olbermann, and, you know, first Olbermann had a little chat with Al Gore, which I'd never seen before, and, they exchanged pleasantries about, Keith, being happy that, Al had brought him on board on current TV. And then Olbermann had a chat with Marcos Melitzis from Daily Coast.
Right.
Melitzis, he sort of, really soft-pedaled Obama. It's too bad, but, we got to stick with him, blah, blah. And then, okay, here's the capper, and then I'll get off. Keith launched into a special comment at the end of the show. And he burned the barn down, Mike. He said he was practically screaming. He was throwing in, goddams, and he said, it's time to go back to the 60s. We got to get out in the streets and scream. We got to go back to the 60s. And he was screaming almost as loud as I am right now. And my message is everybody's got to watch Keith Olbermann's special comment tonight.
All right. That's on Current TV?
Current TV.
Okay.
And Mike, Keith has been listening to you because you're listening to each other, but
well, I used to listen to him all the time when he was on MSNBC because it was very convenient. The last hour of show prep, I could have the TV monitor on, but and I'll guarantee you, he's never listened to me. But I've not, since he left MSNBC, it just hasn't been convenient for me to do it. But I'm glad to hear him, wandering way, way, way off the conservative Democratic reservation that is MSNBC, because that's exactly what it is. I mean, look how many, how many times they have fired people over the years who had the temerity to tell the truth, Oberman being the last one. So, I'm glad to hear that he is talking about taking to the streets. This gig coming up in October in Washington, D.C., is either going to be an event that helps turn the corner in this country, or it's going to be a non-event, won't even happen. I don't think there's going to be any halfway ground. I don't think the people who are going to go to this are going to be there to use rhetoric and get up on the stage or behind the podium and show off about how good they can speak. I think this is going to be something different if it happens at all. If it does happen, it may be a turning point where, just like the Egyptians, just like the whoever, all around the country, when they've had enough, they take to the streets. Now, I'm not saying that what happened in Egypt worked, because it went from one oppressor to another, meet the old boss, same as the new boss. But in Tunisia, here in Libya, across Northern Africa and the Middle East, people finally get to the point in Greece. It doesn't even have to be, it doesn't have to be these volatile countries. It can be countries that you and I and most people consider to be just normal, stable countries. And when you've had enough, you've had
enough.
Before
I go, Mike, can you say one more thing about, that big deal that's going on in October in D.C.? I've got some friends out here that, I need to tell about that thing. I'll say goodbye.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in, Bill. Take care. Yeah, we have... I think I've got, so I don't know, do we have it up on our website yet, Kathy, about the October demonstration? I don't know if we do or not. If we don't, I'll get it up, or Kathy will get it up during the break. I think it's October2011.organize, is that, no, .organize? No, could that be it? No, it's October 2011. I don't know. I just can't pull it up from memory, but I'll get it up there. And you can check it out and decide if you want to go to this. Well, I don't know. I swear to God that sometimes I feel, I live a pretty insulated life because I don't work in a radio station. I don't work in an office building. I don't work someplace where I come in contact with other media people like I did when I worked at CNN or WLS or WSB. This is pretty isolating. And therefore, what I'm thinking and feeling might be a little bit ridiculous, but what I'm thinking and feeling is more and more of this isolation that people out there who should know better, smart, intelligent, thinking people who are media people on the so-called left, radio, television, print, it doesn't make any difference who are just twisting themselves into unimaginable shapes in order to continue to support a president who promised to lead us out of this fascist thicket and has done nothing except take us deeper in. I don't get it. We'll be back after the break. the hour. Hour three of the Malloy program. You know what we're talking about. Two things I want you to check out. FarmAid.org. Go to the website, FarmAid.org. Once again this year, on August 13th, Willie Nelson and FarmAid organization are working to keep family farmers on the land. So check out the website, FarmAid.org. Also, I want you to check out BioWillie, a biodiesel company that is trying to offset the impact of greenhouse gases on the environment. Check both of them. Just I don't know, do a Google on BioWillie, B-I-O-W-I-L-L-I-E. BioWillie Diesel, made in America, stayed in America. Huh? You like that? From Kathy in Maine, Mike, if we want to keep imagining that President Obama is playing chess, then the king, queen, bishops, knights, and rooks are Obama. The House of Representatives, the Senate, the judiciary, and the lobbyists. Wait a minute. Where? Oh, I see. If we want to keep imagining Obama's playing chess, then the king, queen, bishops, knights, and rooks are Obama, the House of Representatives, the Senate, the judiciary, and the lobbyists, respectively. And guess what, truth seekers? In case you don't already feel like one, we are the pawns being pushed, shoved around, and played in order to support and protect the more important players at our expense. Today, in my mind, Kathy writes, it's checkmate, game over. Truly, Mike, I can't stand the, quote, Obama's playing chess while everyone else playing checkers, end quote, analogy any longer. It never made any sense and has an incredibly false ring to it these days. As the federal government passes willingly through the looking glass and inevitably down the rabbit hole, this tired analogy about Obama being so high-minded needs to be disposed of once and for all. By the way, did you see any irony in the return of D.B. Cooper to the news today? Kathy and Maine. Yeah, the only successful, if you want to put it that way, hijacking of an American airliner in history, D.B. Cooper, who bailed out with how much? 200,000? I missed the story, Kathy. I'll look for it in the Times tomorrow. And this, and then back to your phone calls here. So stay right there. I'm coming. Robert Reich, who on his blog today wrote, ransom paid. Anyone who characterizes the deal between the president, Democratic and Republican leaders as a victory for the American people over partisanship understands neither economics nor politics. The deal does not raise taxes on America's wealthy and most fortunate, who are now taking home a larger share of total income and wealth, and whose tax rates are already lower than they have ever been in 80 years. Yet it puts the nation's most important safety nets and public investments on the chopping block. It also hobbles the capacity of the government to respond to the jobs and growth crisis. Added to the cuts already underway by state and local governments, the deal's spending cuts increase the odds of a double dip recession, and the deal strengthens the political hand of the radical right. More than a year ago, President Obama could have conditioned his agreement to extend the Bush tax cuts beyond 2010 on Republicans' agreement not to link a vote on the debt ceiling to the budget deficit, but he did not. Many months ago, when Republicans first demanded spending cuts and no tax increases as a condition for raising the debt ceiling, the president could have blown their cover. He could have shown the American people why this demand had nothing to do with deficit reduction, but everything to do with the Republican Party's ideological fixation on shrinking the size of government, thereby imperiling Medicare, Social Security, education, infrastructure, and everything else Americans depend on. But he did not. And through it all, the president could have explained to Americans that the biggest economic challenge we face is restoring jobs and wages and economic growth, that spending cuts in the next few years will slow the economy even further, and therefore that the Republicans' demands threaten us all. Again, he did not. So the radical right has now won a huge tactical and strategic victory. Democrats and the White House have proven they have little by way of tactics or strategy. And by putting Medicare and Social Security on the block, they have made it more difficult for Democrats in the upcoming 2012 election cycle to blame Republicans for doing so. By embracing deficit reduction as their apparent goal, claiming only that they'd seek to do it differently from the Republicans, Democrats in the White House now seemingly agree with the Republicans that the budget deficit is the biggest obstacle to the nation's future prosperity. The budget deficit is not the biggest obstacle to the nation's future prosperity. Lack of jobs and growth is. And the largest threat to our democracy is the emergence of a radical right capable of getting most of the ransom it demands. Who was our caller from California, Kathy, the woman that called in last hour? The analogy to Weimar Germany was absolutely right there. No, this is not Germany in the 20s, but the conditions, other than the horrific reparations that was demanded of Germany for World War I, and the inability of the German government or economy to respond, especially once the global depression started, there is no wonder that a Hitler rose from the ranks and became the leader, and then resulted in the deaths of 75, is that a fair number? 100 million people globally, or more. So here we are. And one of the side effects, this is the part that drives me completely insane. One of the side effects of all this is that the complete destruction of the Democratic Party. By that I mean the factions within the Democratic Party. We have always been a collection of people who argue and debate, but for the most part, historically, the Democrats eventually come together and manage to run the country. As Stanley Greenberg pointed out, interesting piece Sunday in the huge op-ed section of the New York Times, Why Voters Tune Out Democrats. He said, during the last half century or so, when a Democratic president has led the country, people have tended to experience lower unemployment, less inequality, rising income compared with periods of Republican governance. There's a reason, however, that many voters in the developed world are turning away from Democrats, socialists, liberals, and progressives. Oddly, he goes on a couple paragraphs down, many voters prefer the policies of Democrats to the policies of Republicans. They just don't trust the Democrats to carry out these programs. Amen. There you are. What Barack Obama has done with his waffling, his cowardice, his duplicity, is contribute to the shattering of any sort of coalition that might have been built between left and right Democrats. It's gone. It's completely gone now. And you can hear it just by listening to this program and other programs, reading blogs, and look at the infighting now among the Democrats. And I say to the hardcore right-wing Democrats or the Blue Dog Democrats or the Obama Democrats, kiss my ass. You are destroying the Democratic Party. We'll be right back.
afford to listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
Sean is in Battleground, Washington, listening on KPOJ. Hello, Sean.
Mike, hey, I think a better name for this legislation might be the Democratic Party Voter Suppression Act.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it seems like the Democratic Party has been on a never-ending struggle to alienate its own base, and we might finally be reaching the end point of that. Another thought I had, Mike, was, in your personal life, if someone betrays you, you know, if they stab you in the back,
mm-hmm.
That person basically becomes a non-person. You walk away from them, unless you're totally codependent and have no self-esteem and self-worth.
Right.
You know, but it seems like the logic that I hear people on the radio using is so twisted. It's like the more the Democratic Party stabs us in the back, the more we're supposed to be motivated to go out and rally for the Democratic Party and be drawn to the Democratic Party to try and change the Democratic Party, almost as if the Democratic Party is an abusive spouse that we're going to try to change and work with,
mm-hmm.
rather than do what we absolutely must do, which is just totally walk away and write that individual out of our life completely.
And imagine somebody who runs on the essential Democratic Party ideals, as the teabaggers run on the essential ideals of fascism, and get elected. This is the thing that drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a freshman class of, 83 in Congress, and I would imagine probably about 70 of them were so-called teabaggers. Can you imagine left-wing, they don't even have to be far left-wing, just liberal like, say, Dennis Kucinich, running in various races around the country. First of all, you would find nobody who would do that. I think Kucinich, Bernie Sanders had to get rid of his Democratic Party identification and call himself an independent. If you run as a real Democrat, your ass is going down in flames before you even get past the primary. What the hell happened?
That's right.
That's the part that is just astonishing to me. It means one thing to me, and this country is begging for, lusting after, wants to embrace an American style of fascism. Go ahead.
Mike, it seems like the enemy is inside the wire. The Democratic Leadership Council captured the Democratic Party. And I think it started, even Carter started to deregulate the transportation industry.
Right.
And then Clinton and Gore passed NAFTA, repealed, got rid of welfare, repealed Glass-Steagall.
I think that was more Clinton than Gore,
I remember Gore debating Perot on CNN on Larry King, telling us about how wonderful NAFTA was going to be.
Okay. I don't remember that. I concede the point. But, Gore might have been doing what his master, the head of the ticket, told him to do. But I just wonder if Gore supported it to the extent, he probably did, to the extent that, that Clinton did.
You know, it's like the establishment, both Republican and Democrat, the establishment is trying to teach us a lesson. They're trying to teach us learned helplessness.
Yeah.
You know, basically, no matter what we do, we can't make the electroshock stop. You know, they've got us in their lab, and they just keep zapping us over and over again, and nothing we can do can make the pain stop. And, they expect us to just lay down and take it, like the proverbial dog in the cage getting shocked,
I just wonder, I wonder if that is the ultimate outcome. That you're right. I think that truly is what they're aiming for. And I tend to agree with the people that say that Barack Obama has not betrayed anything, that Barack Obama, it was simply being Barack Obama.
Yeah, and he appointed Erskine Bowles, and he picked Tim Geithner and Larry Summers. You know, this is long before the Tea Party won in 2010.
Right.
He was making, and the stimulus consisted of tax cuts and not infrastructure projects.
Right. Well, it not so much tax cuts, was it? It was more like, the payroll tax. But most of what Obama did was to, I realize Bush started it, shoring up the financial services industry. But there has been no attention paid to those of us out here, the people in the formerly the middle class or the working class in this country, you know, I can walk outside my house and go either direction, east or west, 500 yards and walk past house after house after house that's gone into foreclosure. And yep. What has this administration done? You know, oh, yeah, well, they set aside $20 billion. How much of it has been spent? How many people have had their foreclosures stopped? I mean, it just goes on and on. Christ, I'm just tired of talking about it. But I hear
And there's all these great people on the sidelines. You know, not just Krugman, but you've got Bob Kuttner out there. He's a great economist. You know, you have all. By the way, did you catch Richard Wolff on Democracy Now? Mike,
I did not.
He has this great line. Every time I hear him talk, he uses it. He says, "Here's the punchline, folks. All the profits that corporate America has been making over the last few decades, they turn around and loan it to us in the form of credit cards and in selling bonds to the government. So all the profits that the working class is not getting because the unions are destroyed and benefits have been destroyed, they turn around and lend that to us at interest. That's the punchline."
It's astonishing. Sean, I got to leave it there, pal. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
What's weapons, sharpened knives, makes you want to have the other half die. Other half die. Makes you wonder.
There are many. Seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Jim is in Las Vegas listening on Sirius. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, Mike, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I've been better. I've been worse.
a little of this, a little of that.
I wish you could help me out a little bit better. But anyway, my question is, you know, this kind of seems to be like... It's more the same, you know. I feel like breaking into a Who song, won't get fooled again, and yet we are. And, I mean, the answer to me, pretty simple. It's just like, go back to FDR. He got us out of the last Great Depression. But nobody seems to mention it. Everybody seems to have amnesia about that.
Well, can I make one slight modification? He started to get us out of the Depression, but in 1937, when all of a sudden they dropped the ball and it looked like the country was going back into a depression, and I don't want to be the skunk at the picnic here, but one of the major things that got us out of the Depression was World War II. Now, granted, FDR got the ball rolling, got things started, and as a result of his policies, programs were put in place that we still use today, whether it's unemployment insurance or ultimately the GI, well, not the GI Bill, that came during World War II. But I don't disagree that Roosevelt got us out of the mess that we were in, and no Republican could have done it. But I've gotten a lot of emails from people in the past year who said, you know, please, excuse me, please do your homework, Malloy, and realize that FDR began to get us out of the Depression, but then backed off from some of the programs he was insisting on and allowed Republicans in Congress to start to thwart them. And everything looked like it was going to go straight to hell again. And at the last minute, I hate to say it, but let's be realistic. We know the nature of predatory capitalism. At the last minute, World War II happened and boom, the economy took off and didn't stop until the 70s.
Right. No, I'm kind of aware of that, you know, because I knew.
Yeah. I think most of us are in the backs of our heads that, well, yeah, FDR was a great president. He did a lot of great things. It's just that depression thing. We got a little bit careful because we're not going to have World War III. Oh, if we do, it's going to be over in 15 minutes. It's not going to be like what happened in World War II and built the economic engine of the United States. I don't mean to be a jerk here and try to put too fine of a point on it, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I got you. But the only other thing is, it just seems like sometimes we're living like in a Orwellian world, and I feel like I'm Winston Smith.
Yeah.
And I'm rewriting the news.
Yeah, really.
About how much the sugar allotments were last month or sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. No, that comes through loud and clear. I know exactly what you're saying. Jim, thanks, man. I appreciate your call. Same old is, yeah, same old, only worse. I didn't think things could get politically worse. I'm not saying that Obama in 3 years has done the damage that Bush Cheney did in 8 by any means. But it's trending towards a different kind of worse. And I realize the stage was set by the previous three presidents, but for the collapse of this country. But it just seems to me that Obama has an awful lot of arrows in his quiver that he's just not using. He's just not doing it. It's like he's just watching as everything crashes and burns. Nah, I'm not even going to think about that. Who's next? Jazz is in Memphis, listening on Sirius. Hello, Jazz.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm great. I'm good, man. Thanks to you and all the other truth speakers, I have learned a whole lot over the last 7 or 8 years. But what I want to do, I want to be quick with what I got to say.
Okay.
And as I speak on it, if you would just make a note of it, I'll hang up and just hear your response.
Okay.
With what's going on with the President Barack Obama? Number one, he came in, I think, this is my take. He came into a situation to where the Republicans had their narrative, whether it went back 30 years or back to 1927. And number one, during his campaign, he spoke about that I'm here to change how politics are in Washington, D.C., and I think we've lost sight of that. And another thing he spoke about during his campaign was it wasn't about him. It was about the people. And
right.
Just now, this may sound a little deep, a little off the track to you, but I think that Barack Obama is kind of like, he kind of flows through the vein of Martin Luther King to deliver a message to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that he was given, Martin Luther King, I think, was given all that he needed, you know, to get done,
right.
You know, to put on a bus what we recognize. And it's kind of like with Barack Obama now. If you remember this movie Ben Affleck was in, it was kind of like a movie where they had kind of taken his mind, but he had 5 or 6 or 7 little objects in his pocket, just simple little things that when he got in situations, each one of those things would get him through that. And it's kind of unfolding like that. I hear a lot of people talking about he playing a chess game, this, rope-a-dope that.
Right.
But I think what Barack Obama is doing, he knows he's not only just up against being the president, but I think before he even went into office, he knew that he was going to be up against powers that be. And I think what he's trying to do in a what people might call a weak way or a namby-pamby way is to match wits with what he's up against. But he's been given all that he needs to get his role in American history completed. And Another thing, I think he's clever. He's clever even beyond his administration. I think he's reading his administration to the point that he can shuffle around what they suggest that he should do. I think a lot of times he surprises his administration, which is not spoke to the, you know, leaked out or whatever you want to call it. And it's just, I think what Barack Obama is going through is what, I think he's not a threat to the Republican, but they know he's sort of kind of like unstoppable, kind of like invisible. You know, we know you're there. We just can't see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just my opinion, Mike, and I thank you for all your knowledge you granted me with being a true speaker. I think what it is, in the end, after his second 4-year term, I think perhaps we all look back, and I even think the CEOs and the Wall Street brokers and you know, all the millionaires and billionaires would have to come to a place and say, okay, well, yeah, we needed that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it'd all be good, and perhaps people would disagree with me, but this is just what I think. And I think I don't know when his mind fell into politics as he grew up and went through school, but I think he just saw it from back, you know, perhaps when the big crush came, our first big crush came in the 20s. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just, and I know you're not big on religion, but I think he has been granted things, sort of the same things Martin Luther King was granted, for him to get his point, you know, get what he had to do for American history. I think Barack Obama carries that, you know, just continues that. And I think in the end, America, and perhaps not the world, but America, if the world is looking at America, they will understand that, you know, at times it looked like he was weak. He was, you know, just mm-hmm. not with the program. But I do think the bottom line is, at the end of Barack Obama's second term, which he will definitely get, And excuse my injecting this assassination. That'll never happen. I think Barack Obama will bring the Democrats, the Republicans, the Independents, the Tea Party, whatever else party might come up between now and then in the second election. I think it'll all be.
Jazz, I hear what you're saying, man, but I'm running out of time here. I think the people listening tonight get what you're saying. I would respectfully disagree. I don't think Barack Obama is going to bring anybody together. I think a lot of people have figured out that he's just the same old, same old. But thanks, Jazz. Before the hour, this hour and the whole program tonight sponsored by Farm Aid. I guess we say sponsored by Farm Aid. We are talking about Farm Aid. It's been going on for 25 years. Willie Nelson of Farm Aid, working to keep family farmers on the land. They've raised and contributed more than close to $40 million to help family farmers thrive. So, this August 13th, Saturday, will be the live Farm Aid 2011 concert. You can watch and listen at farmaid.org, and you should go to that website and take a look around. maybe make a contribution. And thanks to the Nelsons and Farm Aid. Okay. Here comes Prairie 2 again. My comment about things are going to hell until World War II. Subject line, Mike. The economy was pretty much recovered by 1941. And when the war started, everything was the New Deal on steroids. Business was not, quote, set free by the war, end quote, as claimed by the right-wing talking points. Absolutely everything required a government permit. Almost everything was rationed. Half the country worked directly for the federal government. Unions were free to negotiate. FDR sent troops to seize Montgomery Ward's headquarters in Chicago for locking out union workers. On and on and on. Don't fall for the right-wing lies. World War II was won on what amounted to, quote, progressive martial law, end quote. Republicans, of course, wanted to be on the other side. All right. I certainly didn't. All right. I'm just going to leave it right there. I said what I said. I said what I said, and Prairie 2, I just didn't think I had gotten that from right-wing talking points, though, Bruce. I got it from someplace. But I'll certainly defer to someone who, up to this point, except on a certain few economic issues, seems to know more about this than I do. Stephen is in Natick, Massachusetts. Hello, Stephen.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
You sound like you're beginning to lose it there, Mike. a little bit.
Yeah, I think, you know, like everybody else in this country, I think I'm tired. Yeah. But also, I don't know, I'm just tired of the same old, just tired of it, you know.
My brother removed himself from the bike, and his back has all of a sudden gotten much better. After spending trillions of dollars on it, it's gotten better from not having to deal with listening to the right wing every day.
Yeah, that's
kind of magic.
Yeah, well, psychosomatic illnesses is usually brought on by real causes, you know. They don't have to be a germ. It can be, you know, stress and pressure and insanity and madness, blah, blah, blah. So what's going on in the banking business?
Well, I can't wait for tomorrow.
What happens tomorrow? What are you predicting will happen tomorrow as a result of this deal tonight?
Well, a few weeks ago when I called, I predicted that we were never going to get to where we just got tonight, in that I didn't think that we would even come to any agreement. I thought we were going to be driven over the cliff.
Yeah, so did
the
I.
Thing, yeah, and to tell you the truth, we have been driven over the cliff. Mm-hmm. Just that, they got some kind of make-believe agreement, and what... Well, why, if I had been a congressman today, I would have been, you know, the Democratic Party split right in half, 95 each way. I would have been one of those 95 that would have voted against this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is this bill puts in law just about that we are going to start paying, you know, the hospitals and doctors less. That we're going to, do all the lousy, terrible, horrible things and that really the right wing really wants. There's very few things, if any, if you dig down deep, you know, there's a couple of things that we may be saved until next year. But the other big, terrible part of this bill is that this bill does not go past 2012. It goes only until a few months from now when, you know, Christmas time, you know, we come up with a new agreement with this make-believe commission, which I am very upset about.
Yeah, the...
Really very upset about.
The Magnificent 12, huh?
Right. It is a, you know, an extra constitutional situation that is going to be making deals behind closed doors. The Democrats do not have a plurality in it. It's going to be whatever the Republicans want. And by the way, they're going to control that too. They're going to take that to the very last moment, which Can you see this? It's going to be December 23rd, Christmas time. You can do the commercials on the fear that the Republican Party nuts are going to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, they'll drive us over a cliff again. So, you know, we've got really bad insanity. What do I see now, tomorrow? I just see 10 times worse. It's just never ending. I have a horrible job, really. And
I know you do.
It doesn't get any better. It's very hard. And actually, I don't know if I told you, but for the very first time, look, I've reached the magic age of 55, and I am thinking very seriously about taking early retirement from banking, seriously, and doing something else with my life.
I've
been in it for 30 years.
I hear that, and I certainly, from what has happened and what I've observed for the past 10 years, I can certainly understand that. Steve, we're flat out of time, pal. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. If you're on hold, we didn't get to you. I apologize. We'll try it again tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.